Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes! Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, man?
I'm not as pumped as I thought I'd be. I'm pumped for the podcast. I think this is going to be a great podcast, as always. And people have been looking forward to it since we didn't have a Monday one. But that Manchester derby just fell a little bit short.
Well, and you were hoping were invested in it in a way that...
Last night I played glory Man United in a way to kind of summon some kind of footballing voodoo to attack Man City.
Who do you think Manchester United fans prefer to see win the title?
City, more easily. No, I say easily. I don't know in Manchester, but certainly Man United fans from back home in Ireland, who are as rabid as anyone, they don't want to see Liverpool.
So this is kind of like, you know, if you're a Yankee fan, would you rather see the Red Sox or Mets? And most Yankee fans, I actually don't know what they would say.
I don't know what they'd say either.
Probably. I don't know.
Because the Mets winning is right on their doorstep.
Right, which is the case with Manchester United and Manchester City.
But the Manchesters are a lot closer together than the Bostons and the New Yorks, if you know what I mean. Distance-wise, you're bumping into more Manchester people and Liverpool people. There's more crossover.
It's very interesting. We're going to talk about that game and all that did and did not happen in it in today's Manchester derby. A win for City, a huge win for City. We'll get into... there's been a lot of action over the weekend. The battle for the top four is insane. Happening right now?
Nobody wants it.
Well, not nobody.
Spurs, they've pushed themselves to the front of the queue.
Not nobody.
Excuse me. Like more soup.
That is the voice in which we speak. So we'll talk about that. We've got a mailbag. I actually haven't seen any of the mailbag.
Oh, I didn't. I did my thing.
Not one word of it.
I got to be honest with you. You will be able to react on the hop to most of these.
Let's see. We have a big what to watch for, consisting of some Premier League, some MLS. We've got red card, man of the match. Should be fun. I do want to start out... by saying a couple things. First off, we never ever do this, but I want to push people. A lot of people listen to this podcast solely off of downloading it from the ESPN FC feed on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's great. Thank you for finding us there and for sticking with us. I'm sure that was probably our introduction to a lot of people was from the ESPN FC feed.
Sure.
But we also do have our own podcast channel as well. When you get the chance, try to just subscribe to the actual Caught Offside channel. And when you do that, just how about a little 5-star rating and review? Because they say that is a thing with metrics that helps our visibility. So
also as well, what if we do something that we're not going to put on the FC feed, but we want it on the Caught Offside feed, and we want you all to listen to it.
And look, here's the thing. I don't want to make false promises. It's not like we're doing that currently, but I think we're waiting to build... Like once we're comfortable enough that our channel has enough subscribers to it, then I would think we would probably want to start doing exclusive content just on there.
And it's easy to find us then, where you don't have to go trawling through any other ESPN FC stuff. You'll find us there our feed.
So just search Caught Offside. And while we're on the topic of Caught Offside, look, this is not an indictment. There's a website out there that is also called Caught Offside.
Yes.
And
let's just speak to specifically what happened.
Well,
for better or for worse. They went ahead and printed some kind of article, which I read, which was terribly put together and unsourced, off a few Twitter comments about what Liverpool fans are supposed to have said at the weekend at Cardiff City, which has been denied roundly. And they're called Caught Offside. So all of a sudden, we've got French journalists tagging us, saying that we are the ones that disseminated comments about Liverpool fans, which we would never do. First of all, we're not a website. Second of all, anything that we would have said would have been said on Thursday's podcast.
Yeah, here's the thing. We have literally no affiliation whatsoever with that website. And I know you want to you don't want me to say it, but I will say, for better or for worse, if they write an article that you hate, we had nothing to do with it. If they win a Pulitzer for an incredible work of journalism, I'll say right now, we had nothing to do with it. We are literally not affiliated in any way, shape, or form. And quite frankly, I think it's time for us to consider a name change for the podcast.
Well, yeah. I mean, this one was hastily put together. I came up with it. I got one kind of meh of agreement from you.
And then it was, okay, let's just record and do this.
I thought Polly, who is a Liverpool fan who got in contact with me, was quite measured in her response. Atzio Soccer Pod, you're scum, just like the Sun paper. Utter which is, you know.
Now, when you write back and say, it's not us, is there an apology?
Polly?
Oh, okay.
No, Polly's not for turning. The lady ain't for turning.
I see.
So, and that's particularly, actually, all joking aside, it's really hard to hear that when you're a Liverpool fan yourself from your own fan base. Even the idea that someone would think I would make up stuff like that about any fan base, to be honest with you. Terrible. So.
What should we change the name to?
The JJ Devaney Show.
featuring
Old Spursy Andy. One more thing. We're entering our fifth year doing this podcast.
Pretty much this week. This is like the fifth anniversary show, essentially.
Essentially, it is.
It's the last week of April in 2014, I think, was our first podcast.
Yeah, so I'm going to try. I've got a few plans that we're formulating just to celebrate that. And one of them is we're going to release our top five.
Well, how about this? We're just spitballing, and this is all totally on the fly. And if you hate it, I'll even edit this out.
Okay.
What if people who are longtime listeners of the podcast, as their iTunes review, submit their favorite memory from the show, and we will do the best that we can to go back and find it, and maybe at the end of like a bunch of episodes moving forward, we'll say, hey, so and so gave us a five star review,
and we'll play
and
the piece.
And at the end of the podcast, we'll just play like that thing.
So many of them are going to be Maradona going. Hey, la.
Oh, you mean this?
No.
He was simply asked for his opinion on the quality of the league.
Imagine if Taylor Twellman did that when he was asked, how do you think MLS is developing, Taylor?
It's not a ringing endorsement.
But anyway, you could pick that. Please don't all pick that. God, don't do that. But any of your favorite moments from the podcast, leave an iTunes review with it. We shall see it and we'll play it over the next few weeks. Makes sense. I think that's a good idea. So I bought myself a present, by the way, for our fifth anniversary.
Your birthday's also coming up, too.
What? Yeah, but not for that. It was for the fifth anniversary. One of my favorite players of all time from the 90s. I bought the Nintendo 98-99 Fiorentina jersey with Rui Costa on the back.
He's one of your all-time favorite players?
Oh, what an elegant man. He glided along the pitch like nothing I've ever seen.
With grace and elegance.
Oh, everything about him was, he had Betty Davis eyes.
Okay.
Don't know where I'm going with that.
All right, JJ, let's get into it. The Manchester Derby was earlier today. It was in doubt. Briefly, I went on Twitter at around 1:30 Eastern time, and Twitter was riddled with videos of water streaming down through holes in the Old Trafford roof.
Yeah,
with people suggesting that the game was going to be cancelled and all 3 points were going to be given to Manchester City.
Yeah, Victor Lindelof was in charge of keeping the water from not leaking in.
Well, it sounded totally preposterous, and in the end, they did play. Rumors. But in the end, the 3 points were handed to Manchester City anyway. JJ, this was, and I guess we shouldn't be shocked by it from what we've seen from Manchester United as of late, but this was just, it was just so not the effort that you thought you would get from a club not just looking to prevent one of their biggest rivals from potentially using this as a major tool to go on and win a title, but also to try to get themselves back in Champions League contention. And man, it was like Mourinho Manchester United. It was just flat, so few opportunities, so few chances that I can really think of where they, are going forward in some kind of threatening attack.
Well, one shot on target.
And sometimes that's deceiving because, Lingard had the one volley that was kind of a pretty like cool attempt.
Yeah, Rashford flashed a shot over the top. Then there was a semi-clearance out of the six-yard box in the second half just after City got the opening goal. That was from Vincent Kompany, and then Lingard was coming in the far side. But generally, Andrew, they didn't create very much because, not quite apart from the fact they didn't have the ball an awful lot, that midfield plumbed levels of ineptitude that I have rarely seen from a Manchester United midfield. Pereira, Fred, constantly giving the ball away, Fred most notably for the second goal. Pogba, Pogba doing his kind of, I'm trying really hard, you know, his kind of like lots of movement, lots of falling over, but not a lot of product. The ball he played in the first half to Lingard for that chance you talked about was fantastic. And it was one of those things where you're like, when Fred and Pereira get the ball, please give it to Pogba, knock it over the top, and get Vincent Kompany in a foot race with Marcus Rashford.
Right.
They weren't able. That is the simplest way to play, and United weren't capable of doing it. Luke Shaw's effort for the Bernardo Silva goal that opened out the game. What was that?
Yeah, I was just wondering, like, is he just going to keep, like, if Bernardo Silva just kept driving at would he eventually just backpedaled into the net? Like, was he ever going to step forward?
Like a glitch on FIFA where the guy ends up in the net. Just so poor. And, you know, Gary Neville was on Sky afterwards saying, oh, well, that's just who they are. That's who this team is. If that's the case, that is...
Referring to Manchester United?
Yeah, you know, he was on about, Roy Keane was on the panel, which was... I mean, the greatest midfielder they've ever had. Well, talk about a night to have Roy Keane on. And he just eviscerated them. And he talked about running an effort and really putting in effort. Now, they did that in the first half. They tried to press. At one point, they forced Kompany to kick the ball out of the line. But generally, Andrew, that all went out the window in the second half. They were supine. They were spineless. They were back to what they were against Everton, which was pathetic. And they, you know... I think if City were at full tilt, and I think if Sané had come on even earlier, it could have been a lot worse for United.
How many times do we need to say that about Sané? I don't understand what he needs to do to become a fixture in the starting 11.
I don't either. A point was made to me on Twitter over the weekend when I said I believe he should be starting games. And the point was, well, you know, who are you dropping? Sterling, Bernardo Silva. Honestly, I think there's a way to put him into the side where you would drop Silva the Elder, David Silva, who was not in the kind of form that you would expect. But certainly, okay, he doesn't have to start, but he can come on sooner than the 84th minute and the 89th minute, respectively, in Champions League games against Spurs.
Yeah, today it was the 66th when he came on.
Which is, I mean, an improvement of 20 minutes.
And then he scored. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He scored in the 66th. He came on in the 51st.
Right, right. Yeah. And he has that ability to change games. Now, he said that in speaking to Arlo and the boys after the game, he said that, you know, there's no issue with Pep. He understands that he can't come into the game when there's so many good players ahead of him. It's not as if he sat there thinking, well, I'm better than him I'm better than him. And I understand that. But I do feel like... earlier in the season, he played more of a role, and that role was slowly but surely phased out.
Yeah, the thing that I sometimes wonder about is, okay, if you're not going to be playing so much in the league, like, maybe that would be for the Champions League. Like, you know, I look at Tottenham, and he's hurt now, but Serge Aurier basically never starts in the league, but then in Champions League games, he's kind of a fixture at fullback. Like, you would think, okay, where is the chance that we can rotate the squad and get Sané in to be playing 90 minutes in at least one of these competitions?
I still believe that if Pep had it to do all over again, De Bruyne and Sané would have started in...
the first leg.
In the first leg against Tottenham. It made no sense not to.
I don't know. Sané didn't start in the second leg.
Yeah, but De Bruyne started the Brighton game beforehand. He started, I can't remember...
Crystal Palace.
The Crystal Palace before...
He was brilliant.
Before that, too. And then all of a sudden he's not playing against Spurs.
It was super weird.
Very strange.
There's no way around it. I want to go back a little bit to something that you said, that Gary Neville said, about the squad for Manchester United. Maybe this is just who they are. I think there's some truth to that.
Go on.
Well, okay. I mean, how much have things really changed? So under Mourinho, they were this dour, underachieving group of players. And then Solskjaer came in and suddenly they weren't. And we all kind of wondered why. A lot of analysis said Solskjaer is really doing a lot of the same things that Mourinho is, but guys are just executing now. And now they're kind of not again. So here's what we're looking at. Solskjaer got the job officially on March 28th. Since then, United have played 7 games, 5 in the league, 2 in the Champions League. He's won 2 against Watford and West Ham. Neither one of those were convincing.
No.
And he's lost all the other 5. And if you want to go back even a little further, he actually lost both of the games leading up to his hiring, an FA Cup one against Wolves and the 2-0 against Arsenal. So in their last 9 games, they've won 2 and they've lost 7, including getting bounced from 2 cup competitions.
Yeah.
So
that's the worst record since 81.
So what would we be saying if this was any other club? Remove the flashy names, Mourinho, club legend Solskjaer, remove all that, and let's just pretend this was some other club. What would we be saying? Oh, well, they got the new manager bounce, and now it's settled back to the mean.
Yeah, but
why are Manchester United that much different than this with anyone else? But this is who they are.
I will get to this in my red card section in more depth, but it's because of the narrative that's been spun. He's come in and he's put a smile on their faces, and we've heard all this nonsense about the United Way, which is total and utter b***. It's not real. It's not something that exists. The United Way, first of all, under Fergie, was wide men wingers, a creative and a holding centre midfielder, and an attacking force with a striker and somebody like Eric Cantona in the team. That was the first iteration. There was another United Way where they were quite dour and played five in midfield and often played Van Nistelrooy up front in his own. That was the second iteration. There's not just one way of playing. The United Way under Fergie was what? Winning. That's what it was. But we were spun this narrative that he's going to come in, they're going to understand what it is to play for Manchester United, they're going to wear the club blazer, you know, there's going to be no headphones, there's going to be none of that, it's all going to, there's just going to be this cultural change.
Let's not act like United with Rooney, with Ronaldo, with Scholes, with Beckham, weren't playing a more, with Giggs, weren't playing a more exciting
they
brand
were,
of football.
But it wasn't one thing, it wasn't the, you know, like, you can, there was so many different ways. There was Ronaldo playing wide as a winger, and then Ronaldo playing wide as a winger, but a goal-scoring winger who scores 30-something goals in a season. There was all these different elements. There wasn't just one way. What there was really good players and a manager that was able to transpose his anger and his, I suppose, his motivation onto the field. That's what it was. Mm-hmm. Now, we haven't seen that with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's come in and he's allowed the players to express themselves. And I'm sure after Mourinho and what we saw, like we saw it from the Sky cameras, the fallings out and the toxic, you know, atmosphere that he created around the club. I'm sure when someone comes in that's fresh-faced and bubbly and can point to glories of the past, that lifts a team. Right. But now, where's the coaching, Andrew?
Yes, that's, I agree. This is what I'm saying.
And I will
it's
get
worn off.
I will get to this at later on. But, you know, you can talk about the United Way all you want. There's no United Way that says you play Victor Lindelof in a wide position against Theo Walcott and watch him get his bum handed to him against Everton.
It was shocking.
It was disgraceful.
Yeah.
You know, there's no United Way that says your goalkeeper, who's probably the best goalkeeper in the world, is now conceding record high goal scoring numbers. What is it? Was it the two goals today that puts him up to 50 conceded for the season?
And it's, but like, look at the goals he's allowing.
Yeah.
I mean, you could say, you know, I know you want to, Luke Shaw was probably mostly at fault, I would say, for the first one, but it's still, it's not a shot Bernardo Silva hits that's very, it's not very hard hit. Kind of, not scuffs it, but, you know,
takes it quickly.
Near post, and yeah, maybe De Gea was just like caught a little bit off guard.
I think he might have been unsighted by the frame of Luke Shaw not doing anything in front of him.
But then the second one from Sané. But look, these are saves you expect De Gea to be making.
But look at the genesis of it. There's like three, four people out of position on that goal. There was this still taken of the United defence on the goal, and it was just like this straight vertical line. And you're like, what are you doing?
And maybe we were, you know, maybe we were all just thrown a little bit. Now, I think you and I were fair. I mean, we said after Solskjaer beat Tottenham 1-0, okay, well, that's a great result for Manchester United.
They weren't
good. But in terms of who the better side was in that on that day, David De Gea put on a show.
But even when they got, even when
the 3-1 maybe against Arsenal, even.
But, well, yeah. But even if you look at the PSG result, which was probably what we thought sealed it for him, I mean, they did not play well that night.
And it was,
Buffon and PSG just
and it was
imploded.
Semi-miraculous.
And there was the miraculous handball then.
Right.
You know, there's all those things. I said at the start, I thought it would be a mental decision to appoint him even as a caretaker, considering his CV and what needed to be done at the club. Now, I actually softened my position on that over the course of the wins and things like that. And I said, you know, he could be a good manager for the next 2 years. But what I didn't say was, you must give it to him now. You have it to him now.
No, we were pretty clear on that. I was.
You've given him that job before you've appointed the key piece in rebuilding the club, which is a technical director or a bunch of technical directors.
Yeah, I just am so curious, who are the guys, and Solskjaer spoke about this a little bit during the week, but who are the guys that if you're a Manchester United fan, you feel comfortable moving forward with on this club? I assume Rashford. I'll throw Lingard in there, and I'll say Martial because he recently signed a contract.
I mean, Martial, his body language when he came on tonight is what...
his body language for a while
is
has
poor,
been...
Yeah. Really poor.
But, you know...
Lukaku out. Pogba out. Fred out. Pereira out.
I mean, wow, what a loss they'll take on Fred.
But, I mean, something's got to change. This isn't working. In fact, Matic out, and the one guy that maybe you could have kept at least as somebody who could perform a function in midfield, because really he's not as old as Matic or his legs aren't going as Matic's appear to be, would have been Ander Herrera. He's not going to be the difference, but he's going to walk away to, during the summer, we're led to believe.
It's pretty incredible to see what's happened with, I mean, just so many.
It's just no strategy. But no strategy to it. Look at it. You've got signings from the Fergie era playing centre-back, who should probably be long gone out of the club. You have a full-back who was signed as a winger by Alex Ferguson, you know, playing at wing-back in Ashley Young and captaining the club. Then you've got all these mixed. Like, look, what do you do with Alexis Sanchez? Who's taking that contract?
It feels immovable.
Just this scattergun approach. Yeah. Miguel Delaney is a really good piece about this prior to the game tonight. Check it out. Go to his Twitter and you'll see it.
So for City, this was the game at hand. They move ahead of Liverpool now. They've now both played 35 games. City are ahead by 1 point. They're ahead by 8 points on goal difference.
You're looking for the slip-ups now.
Yeah. It's just, I keep repeating this to you and I feel bad drilling it into your head because I'm sure you feel worse and worse every time I say it, but I've just never seen anything like this where Liverpool may go through the season losing one game and not winning a title. It's just crazy.
I'm looking at it now, and I'm thinking, they have to go to Burnley. And you know, Sean Dyche would just love to have them come in.
Well, he just did it to Chelsea.
He'd throw handbags and glad rags at them. Then you've got Tremendous Character. But that's at home. They're at home to Tremendous Character. Right. And then you've got Brighton away, who
could be fighting for their lives at that point.
So there's a little bit of jeopardy in those games. I don't know.
And then, meanwhile, for you guys,
Huddersfield on Friday, which, if you're not winning that, you don't serve to win the title anyway. I shouldn't say that. They should win. They should take the 3 points. That's at home to Huddersfield. Huddersfield at home. Newcastle away, which Newcastle are safe, but I would be. They're in a bit of form now.
They're defending well, so it could be one goal that decides
it. Yeah, and they're feeling themselves.
Now, we'll talk a little bit more about them later and what to watch for, but they did suffer a bad injury.
Significant. And then there's Wolves, and that's at Anfield, and you know, Wolves are a bit of a Jekyll and Hyde team, so you don't know what you're going to get there.
They're not Jekyll and Hyde against top six. JJ, I don't know if you happened to see what they did to Arsenal today, but it was, I would say it was shocking, but I guess you can't be shocked by it anymore. They beat Arsenal 3-1. They were up 3-0 at one point.
Three goals from three of their foreign players, Neves, Jota, and Matt Doherty.
I saw this from Paul Carr. It's the most points per game versus the top six in the Premier League this season. Manchester City averaged 2.5 points per game against the top six side. Mm. Then Liverpool at just under 2 points per game. And then in third, Wolves, followed by Chelsea, Arsenal, Tottenham are ninth, Manchester United are 10th. Wolves are averaging basically a point and a half per game against the top six. It's amazing, and if you're a Wolves fan, it's led to some of the most fun moments that you could probably recall in the recent history as a fan, but yeah. My God, the frustration of not being able to do that against lower table teams. Who knows where they could be?
I'm going to bore people with this, but I look at the big picture with Wolves, and I think next season they're going to be contending to be in a top six side.
They can't afford to lose players, and how are they?
They're, I mean, we know the way that they operate in terms of the transfer market. They're securing Jimenez, who was one of their crucial players. They're securing him, what, a month ago they signed him?
Yeah.
To a contract extension?
Well, not an extension. They made the loan official.
Signed him outright.
Right.
We know the way that they operate and the knowledge that they have in the transfer market, and we know that Fosun, the company that owns them, will back them. They're probably going to kick on, and that's got to be their aim. Or else what is this for? They are moneyed in a way that the other clubs aren't, and they are already stretching their muscle against the top six.
Yeah, meanwhile, from Arsenal, you look at it, and it's now back-to-back defeats against Crystal Palace, against Wolves. This is you know, Everton, the defeat only a couple weeks ago. This is a shocking stretch for them.
Yet, it's interspersed with them taking apart Napoli in the Europa League.
Well, that's the thing. Look, they are still full steam ahead for a spot in the top four. But their avenue into a Champions League spot is now, I would say, almost equally split between doing it through the league and doing it through the Europa League. So their attention is probably fixed in two different places. Still, that's not an excuse for how they've looked in these past couple games against Palace. You know, the defending on the Christian Benteke goal against Palace over the weekend is just awful. They've got a lot of problems, mainly in the back, I would say, right
but
now.
But even look at some of the characters that have popped up over the last couple of days. Say, for example, on social media, the Arsenal fan who got a lot of attention, including from our own Craig Burley, where he tweeted out the stats that suggest Skodran Mustafi's had a better season than Virgil van Dijk.
Oh my God.
You know, that was funny, you know, amusing. But he's still at the club. You look at the guy who scored tonight, Socrates. He's still at the club. Not up to it, Andrew. They need to revamp and rebuild that entire defence. And we've said that already.
Yeah, and look, some of it, though, is not necessarily just on these players. It's also on the manager who is selecting these players to play. If you looked at the lineup that was out there for the Crystal Palace game, there were some head-scratchers. And here's Paul Mariner on ESPN FC talking about Emery's lineup choices.
This is not a throwaway game. So what does he do? He plays a young kid, Mavropanos, at the back. He's not ready. So don't play him. You've already got, in my opinion, a very poor back three. Koscielny, it kills me to say it, he's been a fantastic servant, but he's just going over the edge a little bit. Mustafi is all over the place. He's got Jenkinson out there. You know, he's playing the kid, Guendouzi, who's going to be a good player, but he's not ready yet. So there's so many things wrong with this setup. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't sure he was going to play a four at the back, was he going to play a three? So, and it came to pass, because when you look at the first goal, okay, there's a guy called Christian Benteke. He's 17'8", this guy. It's very difficult not to mark this guy. But yeah. Mustafi gets the wrong side of him initially before the ball's coming in. He's put his hand up because he thinks Benteke's offside. And as far as Mustafi's concerned, he is. Mm-hmm. But Jenkinson's behind him, playing everybody onside. And it's like, what are these guys doing training? It's embarrassing.
Yeah, that's fine, but this is something that's bedeviled Arsene Wenger certainly in the latter years of the last decade, and also is now troubling Unai Emery. He can't grow players. You know, he's probably put in one of the players that he mentioned there. He's probably played him because he hasn't got any other options. You know, he's got to wait till the summer, and even in the summer, guys.
Oh, look, he's got Torreira coming off the bench.
Torreira's not a defender. He's defensive centre mid, is what I mean. My point to you is this, Andrew, is that he's going to have to address this in the summer. And with some of the contracts that they're already tied to, including Mkhitaryan and Ozil, I suppose that's why they're getting rid of Ramsey, to free up some money.
Let's see. We look at some of the other top four that were in action recently. Tottenham lost to Manchester City over the weekend in a game where they actually played pretty well but just couldn't quite finish. They had chances.
Second half, thought City were
better. Yeah, Son had a couple where he just couldn't quite get the ball out from under his feet. But it was a pretty good game. And obviously an important win for City. And that was followed by yesterday, where Tottenham took on Brighton in a game that was just... It was filled with all the dread, basically, that I sometimes talk about with Spurs, where, you know, all these great things are happening around them. You know, Chelsea are drawing with Burnley, and United are giving it away, and Arsenal are giving it away. And now you've got Brighton before you at home. And look, Brighton do... A lot of people, I saw on Tottenham Twitter, people were losing their minds over the way Brighton decided to play that game.
Why?
I agree. I mean, look, like we've said so many times, like we said when Portugal went on and won the Euros, beating France, their job is not to entertain you. At this stage in the season, especially when you're trying to stave off relegation, their job is to survive.
They got a point at Wolves, and they knew another point against Tottenham would edge them that little bit ahead of Cardiff.
And
they set out the game plan, and if Stevens had closed down that shot by Eriksen properly, instead of doing the thing that annoys me all the time, the jump in the air back spinny thing, blinded the goalkeeper and it flew into the bottom corner. Great strike.
It was a great strike from Eriksen. Here is what it sounded like.
Eriksen! Late! Dramatic! Emphatic! Significant it could prove to be.
Oh, the relief in that moment when he hit that ball. Tottenham, I don't know if you remember, but the shot that hit off the inside of the post and rolled along the goal line, like that's when you start to think, uh-oh, this is not happening.
When you see that one, you've convinced yourself it's going to be one of these days, and you're going to look back at this when you're not in the top four.
You keep waiting for that Spursy moment. It didn't happen in the Champions League, at least certainly not yet. And
I'm not anymore.
That's the thing, is you feel like the narrative is, I'm almost afraid to say it because there's still time for everything to turn. But in watching the way teams around them are just failing at this stage in the season and at the way Tottenham are still right now kind of eking out results after they went through that rough patch, since they've moved into their new home, they have not lost. They have not drawn. They've won every game in the new stadium.
Also, you talk about these Spursy moments, and someone was on Twitter the other day, a Chelsea fan, no doubt, talking about, I can't wait till Spurs get to a final and they bottle it. Whatever. Even if they do get to the Champions League final and bottle that, even if they don't make it to top four, there is no way any Spurs fan is swapping anything that's happened this season so far so they can have a Carabao Cup or an FA Cup final.
By the way, can we also say right now that if Tottenham get to the Champions League final, and let's say they lose to Liverpool or Barcelona,
it's a tremendous season.
We're way past the term bottling. Like, is that somebody who just doesn't know what that means? I mean, okay, fine. If they've got like a 4-0 lead in the second half and they give it away, then yes, we can say that they bottled it. But if they get to a Champions League final, Tottenham.
I don't know why people. It's amazing how these terms just sneak into the zeitgeist on Twitter, and people just, they tweet the same memes when anything happens, even if it was at the start.
I mean, bottling, like the American translation would be choke, right?
Yeah, but there's means and ways of doing that.
Yeah, like,
they'd have to go into the final as the wild favourites. It would have to be Tottenham versus Shakhtar Donetsk or something like that for them to lose and it be bottling.
Yeah, like in college basketball, if like a mid-major, that's not what Tottenham are. Let's say like a 6 seed or a 5 seed get to a national championship game and take on Duke. Would you say they choke if they don't win that game?
I think what the guy said was, and they'll do their usual, which is maybe not, he maybe didn't use the term bottle, but he said lose in a final. Right. I'm like, they've never been to a Champions League final before.
Let's see. Speaking of Chelsea, I did mention they drew with Burnley.
That was actually a fun game, or a fun first half, anyway.
Well, yeah, a fun first 25 minutes or so.
Jeff Hendrick, he loves a volley.
Oh my God.
He only scores volleys.
It was really incredible. Now, I guess my big, in looking at all the top four games, my big observation kind of comes out of that one. We're talking about, what Brighton set out to do against Spurs. Well, David Luiz, I guess, felt similarly in what Burnley did against Chelsea. He said this: "We tried everything to win the game, but it's difficult playing a team who has 2 chances, score 2 goals, but didn't want to play the game. For me, the authority on the pitch is the referee, and when he's not there to try to check what he has to do on the pitch, it's difficult. They were trying to time waste from the first minute of the first half, and then it was anti-football, so it's difficult to play against."
Well, there's no such thing as anti-football. There's just different ways of playing the game. Also, David Luiz was part of a Chelsea team, I believe, was it last season or the season before? I can't remember, that went to Burnley Turf Moor and lost the game. And Burnley played exactly the same way. I don't understand this mentality. If you've got to be good enough to go and break them down, you can't complain afterwards.
The other thing too, okay, they're trying to play anti-football. Hey, they scored 2 goals. Like if they're, now granted, it was in very few opportunities.
They took the lead.
But like, you're Chelsea, you allow them to score on like hardly any opportunities.
Yeah.
How about just defend them? I thought it was...
This crying from players of moneyed teams with well-heeled teams with lots of skillful players who play a certain way, and they complain, why don't you come to our stadium and just roll over and let us tickle your belly? When has that ever happened?
It's a great point, man. Now, there were moments where I thought Chelsea played well. The run from Ruben Loftus-Cheek to then get the ball to Eden Hazard to then set up N'Golo Kante for the first goal, I think it was.
By the way, how many times did Hazard turn to the defender and just leave him on the ground?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, that was, that's what Chelsea can be.
By the way, the move for the Higuain goal was spectacular too. It was some nice one-touch footballing around the box, and it was Azpilicueta, I believe, who just like rolled this back heel into his path, and he's just smashed it. Absolutely smashed it, and then embraced a member of the crowd. It was a... Chelsea played well at times, but they're...
Well, it's what makes them maddening.
I don't think it's going to damage them now, considering that Arsenal lost so much.
Well, what it means is they didn't really...
They didn't gain...
They could be in a nice position, but instead it remains a toss-up.
Yeah, you're right.
Really, it was only Tottenham that have taken advantage so far. JJ, moving beyond the title race, the top four, it bears mentioning that Shane Long did a thing yesterday that I could not even honestly believe when I saw it. Now, I was watching Tottenham, so... as I'm scrolling through Twitter, I saw someone...
We tweeted it.
Well, I saw the game kicked off, and then I saw right away goal Southampton 1-0, and I thought, like, is this just a retweet from like the last time they played? Is somebody just trolling?
Right.
And no, here, give it a listen.
Well, the top six continue their own battle for places in the Champions League or the Europa League, but there's a chance here immediately. Shane Long, what a start! Less than 10 seconds played.
7.69 seconds is what they're officially calling it.
It was an encapsulation of what he is when he's at his best. He presses, blocks the ball. Now, the ball fell kindly for him. Then he just sprints in, showing that pace that he has. I think it was Cathcart he closed down, and then he just lifts it over the goalkeeper perfectly.
Yeah, now, look, when something like that happens, I feel like people instinctually need to find blame. Like, is Cathcart to blame? Is the keeper to blame? I don't know. Isn't that just kind
it's
of
just a great
fluke?
Bit of, it's
like, it takes a wild bounce off Long right kind of into his path.
But the fact that from minute one he's in there pressing and closing people down is who he is. I remember
it's
back.
It's so funny to hear you say that. Didn't he have this epically long goalless
streak? This is the thing for him. I remember in 2016. Jurgen Klopp was in the Liverpool job just a few months, and there was this rumour that went out that Liverpool were looking at buying Long from Southampton. Liverpool fans were, why? This is why. Because he runs more than most players at that level. He closes down. The problem is, he's not a polished finisher, despite that goal. And he goes too long without scoring goals.
JJ, I have in front of me a ticking clock.
Oh, here
it's
we go.
It's 7.69 seconds.
This is ridiculous.
I'm going to ask you...
Random questions.
I'm going to ask you super mundane, easy, simple questions. This isn't even trivia.
Oh, come on.
This is just like super easy stuff. Don't look. You're staring at my paper.
You never do it that way. You're always out to belittle and hurt me.
No, because the goal here is just to see, can you answer the easiest questions possible faster than Shane Long scored a goal in the Premier League?
You have my backup here now.
Okay, ready?
Go.
Here we go. What'd you have for lunch yesterday?
Chicken sandwich.
Really?
Yep.
Come on. All right. You did it. I've got a clock that's 7.69 seconds.
That was it?
Well, I got a couple more. Well, what do you think is happening here? I just want to see.
All right. Okay.
Let's see. Ready? Can you tell me where you bought that shirt and pants?
I bought the pants in Penny's in Ireland. I bought the shirt online.
You just barely beat it. That was close. All right.
This is ridiculous. It's like no time.
I know. He scores a goal.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more here for you. How old are your brother and sister?
32 and 34. Sorry.
You did it. With about a second and a half to spare.
By the way, do we have any idea from where he won the ball? Like the sprint from there to the goal? From there until he scores the goal? He ate the field up.
Yeah. I almost don't know how it was actually physically possible to do that quickly.
He's a few goals, like three in his last five or something like that, so he's officially on fire.
He's on fire.
Somebody tweeted the fire service of Southampton or something like that. Shane Long is on fire, and we're dealing with it.
I'm trying to think if there's one more super mundane, easy question I could ask you. Are you watching Game of Thrones currently?
I am.
You are?
Yeah.
Let's see. What are the names of the two dragons?
I don't know that one.
Oh, all right.
Big Dragon and John and Tom.
I thought the first two episodes, by the way, of Game of Thrones, the second one specifically was sensational.
The second one was good. Tying up loose ends and preparing us for the March of the Dead.
Thought it was the tension of all these people who just believe this is their last night alive.
Yeah.
It was like there was a darkness to it, but I don't know. I really, really enjoyed it.
It's like the night before a Spurs game.
I just sit around.
Drinking wine.
I get knighted. Oh, such a good show. I'm so sad it's going to be over.
Yeah, no, it's a very enjoyable show. We have to do, by the way, in the week of the final episode, we're going to have to do our Game of Thrones football crossover.
Do you have predictions on who you think are going to make it and who are going to die?
There's a twist in somewhere with Cersei that I can't put my finger on. The army of the...
I'm torn on everything because the show is kind of based around this like unpredictability.
I think Tyrion is because he's talked so much about how this will be the end for him. I think Tyrion's going to eat it. I think Jaime's going
to be sad.
Jaime's going to eat it in heroic fashion that leaves us with a good view of him.
He has to save Bran. to make up for, well, not that it really
pushing him out
up,
the window, right, because he was having sex with his sister.
Yeah, he has to do something heroic.
There's a lot of making up to do there.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, and but he's gonna definitely. I think he's not gonna make it. By the way, did you see?
I think Brianne has gone too. The way that whole knighting ceremony, how happy she was to have gotten that moment. I feel like that was like her pinnacle, and now she can die.
Do you know that Jamie Lannister?
Feel so cold saying.
Speaking of death, you know that Jamie Lannister, his the actor that plays him, is also a big Leeds fan, and he inserted it into his conversation. So he was on Jimmy Kimmel.
Into what conversation?
His conversation with Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh.
2 weeks ago, Jimmy Kimmel's trying to get out of him about the King of the North and all this stuff, and he just starts going on about Bielsa and totally, yeah, he goes on about Bielsa and completely confuses him.
Really?
By the way, speaking of the Walking Dead and the armies of the North, the Army of the North, Leeds are blowing their chance spectacularly.
Oh my God, I know, felt like they were right on the doorstep.
Oh my God, they've lost to Brentford, and then they lost before that to, I can't remember who it was, Andrew, they might have to go through the playoffs. This will be their battle with the Army of the Dead.
Yeah. Let's see. We're going to take a super quick break, JJ. When we come back, we've got a mailbag. We've got what to watch for. Red cards, man of the match. Don't go anywhere.
This might be the best one on the right side. It's Bernardo Silva! And he's scored a massive goal for Manchester City in the title race. Look at that injection of pace from Raheem Sterling, and he's got support. Sané's free on the left-hand side. Here's Leroy Sané on the left foot. Sané shoots. 2-0.
Reliving Manchester City's 2-0 victory over United with Oasis,
who are probably the biggest celebrity fans of Manchester City.
Certain.
I think they were on the board of City for a little while in the late 90s. They played at Main Road. There's also a brilliant video of the League 2, sorry, it would have been Division 1 playoff. Division 2 playoff, which it's unbelievable to think that City were down there and the Gallagher brothers are at the game and they're interviewed by Sky. It's,
true fans.
Yeah, they're absolutely obsessed with it.
I saw Zac Efron at the new White Hart Lane.
Yeah, but I think he was at Arsenal a few years back.
Was also seen in an Arsenal shirt once, so I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, he will definitely be spotted at the Parc des Princes wearing a PSG jersey next year.
Feels like that. Let's see, you have a mailbag?
I do indeed. @SuoSoccerPod on the Twitter machine, caughtoffsidepod@gmail.com, and caughtoffsideESPN on Instagram. Please follow us on Instagram. We want to see you follow us there too, because the hip kids do it and we're not very hip. @DreForever. Hey guys, love the pod. JJ, you did well with your prediction for the Champions League, producing a terrific high-scoring game. What type of game do you foresee in the semi between Spurs versus Ajax and Barcelona versus Liverpool? Do you believe in a caught offside cup Champions League final?
Oh my God.
What do you think? Spurs and Ajax, I can't not see it being an exciting open game. And ditto the other one.
Oh no, this is a really entertaining last four here.
There's no doubt.
I
hate doing this, but you should expect goals in both ties.
Yeah, absolutely.
Home and away.
Who will be the team that shuts up shop? Yeah, I don't see any team here going into these games and thinking, okay, we're just going to defend the hell out of this. I don't think that's really in any of these teams' personality.
Zach Walder is talking about Salah. I had to break this down. And he contacted us on Instagram as well. He slid into our DMs with this. I know he scored 19 goals so far this season, but I think we all can say that when you've watched Salah play this year, it can be absolutely infuriating as he turns the ball over, misplaces passes all over the field, and routinely misses open teammates in better positions to score, and instead opts to try and go to goal himself. I'm familiar with the motto, shooter's got to shoot, but sometimes maybe the shooter could pass to Sadio Mane or Bobby Firmino. Just my thoughts, and wanted to get your guys' take on everything. Earlier in the message, he had suggested moving Salah on.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Now, that to me, as a relative outsider to Liverpool, that feels just so harsh. I almost can't even believe what I just heard, but I'll defer to you.
No, I think it's crazy. Absolutely crazy. I wouldn't do that at all. There were times against Everton where I wished he had, you know, try to shoot with his other foot, and has his season been different? But I keep saying to you that, you know, he couldn't match what last season was because it was a freak of a season. He's not an out-and-out goal scorer either. And that front three operates as a three that's going to combine with different things. And by the way, Sadio Mane, for a period as well, during this season, was missing chances. And was
Now, he's going to go on to be one of the players of the season, right. Sadio Mane. But for a couple of years now, we've talked about how erratic he can be.
Yeah, I think...
Look, some of it, the way Liverpool play, those guys see a lot of the ball.
Right.
Which increases the chances for them to make mistakes.
They're not... By the way, they're not deferring to someone as a centre-forward, you know. They're all contributing goals, and they probably, maybe there is a little bit of greed to Salah's game since last season. He, in interviews, he's made himself very aware that he's in this goals race with Sergio Aguero and Raheem Sterling and assists and all those things. Mm-hmm. He's aware of it.
Which is normal.
But I am not.
I have a little bit more on him in What to Watch For, which is also not flattering.
I'm not selling him.
I'm not even hinting at that, but we'll get to it.
Brandon Beiser. I wanted to share a happy memory with you both that I recalled when the Gold Cup draw was announced for this year. On the night the USA was eliminated from contention to take part in the World Cup, boy, this is not starting well, in 2017, Trinidad and Tobago Day, that was the first time I listened to your podcast. In the middle of the night, I woke up not feeling well and usually turned to the local radio to listen to it as I fell back to sleep. However, on that night, I figured your one-hour podcast about arguably the worst day in US soccer's recent history was better to settle an upset stomach. I made it through about 20 minutes before falling asleep. The next morning, I started your podcast over again and listened to the entire show detailing soccer in a new way for me. Since that night, I do not believe I've missed an episode. Every mailbag man of the match, red card, etc. Your podcast has become such a routine for me that I named a project about creating a formal request and feedback process for my company in honour of the mailbag, because why not? Keep up the good work and thank you for sharing soccer with us.
Wow.
From the Upper East Side of New Jersey. That's Brandon.
The Upper East Side of New Jersey?
I think he's trying to do a play on your intro. From the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Kevin Stiles. Hello, Messrs. Gundling and Devaney. Hello, Kevin. Hey, lads. I was recently chastised for not being a true fan.
Oh, no.
Back in 2017, we're bad with these issues. Schalke lost their first in five matches. Sorry, they lost their first five matches. I watched their sixth, a win over Borussia Mönchengladbach. I was captivated by the fans cheering so loudly. I didn't even realise they were singing to a sound system, as they were so loud they drowned it out. It was clear Schalke probably weren't making top four or even top six that year, but the fans still cheered like it was a Champions League final. Coming from a family that passionately roots for teams that are lovable losers more often than not, this display touched me, and I developed the soft spot for Schalke. I began to follow them, slowly becoming a fan. I admitted as much to a long-time Schalke fan and was promptly chastised for not being a real fan. So I guess the question is this a needless purity test, or is my affinity for them unwarranted in some way?
Tell them to go scratch.
Oh my God, ridiculous. How you became a fan is not the issue. When we were talking about the Leicester bandwagon fan, he literally jumped on when they were in the middle of a title race. This is a guy who is captivated by the fans, by the lovable loser element, by the passion. Tell that guy, go and take a hike.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I've even grown to feel bad about what we said about the Leicester fan.
I do too, but I never said he couldn't become a fan. I'm just saying there's reason for us to call him a bandwagon
right.
fan.
I guess his origin story is not... It doesn't look great.
No. Luis Correa. Hello, boys. Huge fan here. I'm also a big fan of the Michael Kay Show and listen every chance I get. And I've never understood Michael Kay's absolute hatred of colour commentators stepping on the calls of the main commentators. To me, it shows a level of emotion and personality that proves that we're not just listening to robots. I love it. How do you guys feel about it? Moments like Gerrard versus Olympiacos are that much more special in hindsight because of that iconic, oh yeah, beauty, among countless other moments. Anyway, keep up the great work. Luis from Los Angeles. So that's Luis from Los Angeles.
Yeah, without that, we wouldn't have this, which is actually the seven years ago today this happened.
To give Chelsea a place in the Champions League final.
I can't believe that was 7 years ago.
Yeah.
It feels longer than that.
Unbelievable. That was Gary Neville stepping on over the Sky commentator.
Yeah.
As long as it's not contrived, I agree with Luis.
And rarely is it. I think in these big moments, when a color commentator loses his mind, it's because the moment is so crazy he loses his mind.
We have, which this may end up in one of our top five podcast moments. We have a Ray Hudson section, which even Ray himself loved the section, listening back to it. I do feel at times Ray wants to not so much step all over Phil Shane, but do an Irish jig on Phil's belly. Like
they're here for me, Phil.
Yeah.
Don't you forget that.
Phil, don't forget, I am the talent. He's like a gunslinger who's come down from the mountain and is slinging his guns.
Some of the great similes of all time.
This is interesting. Finally, from Paul Dixon. Guys, love you both and the pod. Remember last week, Andrew, we played the Pathé newsreel of the Champions League semi-final from 1962? Mm-hmm. The voice of Pathé was Bob Danvers Walker. Don't ask me how I remember. Remember, Paul? How old are you? He was also the voice on a 1960s UK quiz show called Take Your Pick.
Huh.
Hello and welcome to...
Right, the classic British commentator pre-1970.
Hello and welcome to Take Your Pick, in which you take your pick. Contestants at the ready. Jim from Shropshire. By the way, Paul gives a little tidbit here. Yes, Jimmy Greaves signed from AC Milan to Spurs.
Right.
He had been at Chelsea after the double season that Spurs had.
I was right.
I didn't even realise. So he never played in the double team. He signed for £99,999. He didn't want the pressure of being the first 100K player, first £100,000 transfer free. I did a little bit of research. It's even more interesting than that. This is from The Telegraph in 2001. The transfer of Jimmy Greaves from AC Milan to Tottenham Hotspur in 61 for around £100,000 was considered to be so delicate at a time of currency exchange controls that the Chancellor of the Exchequer in England had to sanction it. Papers released by the Public Record Office show. The government of Harold Macmillan agreed to the transfer only because Britain's status as a net exporter of soccer talent meant that the country benefited from an unfettered transfer market. The contrast with today's market is marked. Last year, the Premiership spent 75% of its purchase money on foreign players who made up 60% of its new recruits. That's in 2001.
This is amazing. Who did this research? You or him?
No. So Paul told me about the 100K,
and then I
looked it up, and there was an article from The Telegraph from some years ago.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. That is your mailbag, JJ. We've got what to watch for in just a sec, but before that, I want to tell you about ZipRecruiter.
Oh, ZipRecruiter.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. Ed Woodward should have used ZipRecruiter instead of just going with old Ollie balls.
Oh, wow. So there's JJ. That's it. Let's see. Hiring is challenging, JJ.
It is. But you could get that guy back from Molde who's playing in a championship that's lower than the Kazakhstani and Azerbaijani championships and give him the Man United job.
There's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's right. That's us. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. No. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. Like soccer. Match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, listeners to this podcast can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/offside. That's ZipRecruiter.com/offside, OFFSIDE. ZipRecruiter.com/offside. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Oh, yeah. What to watch for. Here we go. EPL.
Right.
Friday. That's right. Don't forget, Friday, 3 o'clock, and it's got title implications.
See you in Carragher's.
Liverpool and Huddersfield Town from Anfield. I mentioned before that I wanted to talk about Mohamed Salah a little bit more in, again, not so flattering terms. This past week, in the wake of last week's game, there's been a rejuvenation in the Salah diving discussion.
Like, of all the dives that Salah's probably done this season, this one is the rejuvenation? What a load of...
I'm not making it up. I'm just a vessel to deliver the message.
You're a vessel working for Neil Warnock, is what you are.
Yeah, here's what he said. Oh, he said
more Warnock!
He is a treasure. Oh, I cannot believe my turn on him in the last few months.
Did you see his sarcastic face on the sideline when the penalty was given?
I said, sorry, he's 2 yards offside. He didn't know he was offside. I love that. Like, it's so funny to me. He said this about Salah diving. I think the end of it was a 9.9 Tom Daly job. Tom Daly is a famous diver.
I know who Tom Daly is.
I'm not talking to you. I don't think he could have got much higher off the diving board at the end of it. I'm sure you'll be saying, Warnock's moaning so-and-so once again. He knows, like, he's so self-aware, which is hilarious to me. He knows what he knows that he's just this old man yelling at clouds, and he's like, you know what? I'm going all in on that.
That's shown you the footage. He was an old man yelling at clouds. Hey, you deserve that. He deserves that, right?
One of my favorite moments in manager history.
Unbelievable to goad the players as they go off the field.
I don't think I could play for him.
Oh, I think it would be tremendous fun. He would create such an us against the world mentality.
I guess that.
And by the way,
that is true.
For a one-footed plodder like you, you'd slot right into his team.
Salah, though, like what?
Andrew,
what is he?
Did
doing?
You see the incident? I'm going to ask you now. Did you see the incident?
I did, and I
Morrison
think,
has right. his arms round him. Right now. Does Salah dive at the end? Yes, but the referee gives Morrison all day to release him from his bear grip, and he never.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you want to argue the point, Salah just goes, I might as well dive here.
What I was going to say was, both things can be true.
Right.
It can be a penalty
and
a dive.
And it can be a dive,
simultaneously.
Folks. The more you learn.
But he does have a problem, and it needs to be addressed. Saturday, 7:30 a.m., Tottenham and West Ham. West Ham have kind of made a habit of spoiling big Tottenham moments in the last few years.
Because they hate you.
They certainly do. There's no denying that. They knocked Spurs out of the FA Cup. They were the team that officially ended, even though Tottenham were never going to win that title 2 years ago against Chelsea. West Ham was the team that officially ended it.
Ravel Morrison scored against you during the Sam Allardyce era. Let's not even mention the Lasagna Gate game.
Yeah, so there are reasons for some nerves heading into this. Now, like I said before...
Do you think Martin Yall ever ate lasagna after that day?
He wasn't afflicted, was he?
No, but do you think just the whole connotations...
It ruined lasagna for him.
Yeah, not making the Champions League.
It'd be such a shame. Like, if there was ever, like, Doritos Gate, I don't know what I would do.
I heard Robbie Keane gets offered lasagna and runs out of the restaurant screaming.
I don't blame him. There should really be... ESPN should do a 30 for 30 on Lasagna Gate. I think it's that interesting.
Maybe an E60 short.
All right, we'll start with that and we'll negotiate. Saturday, 10 a.m., Fulham and Cardiff City. Cardiff right now sit in the relegation zone. They're 3 points behind Brighton, really more like 3.5 because of goal difference. So we're kind of entering must-win territory now, especially when you look at who the opponent
is. Yeah, and Fulham have decided to start playing a little bit lately, you know, winning the odd game.
Yeah, I know. I'm starting to wonder, like, are there guys who are trying to prove that they still belong in the Premier League that are, like, auditioning for jobs, because Fulham are going to have, you know, they're going to sell people.
Sure. I'm sure that's a part of it. I'm also thinking that there's some that are there that realize they're going to be in the Championship next season and would like to be at the club that they're already at, which has a good chance of going back up. And
perhaps,
there's also the Scott Parker effect, who is just, he's like an MI5 secret agent.
I always saw definitely more of a World War II fighter pilot.
Yeah, clean cut.
Definitely.
With a haircut you could set your watch to.
Mm-hmm. I always liked him. Let's see. Saturday, 12:30, Brighton and Newcastle. Brighton are the team battling Cardiff right now in that final relegation spot. They are in the midst of free fall. Haven't won in the league since March 9th. But there's more. That is also the last time they scored a goal.
Wow.
7 straight EPL games without scoring.
Do you think maybe the cup run took their eye off the ball a bit?
Yeah, all right, that's as good a guess as any. I don't know. I mean, this is just, like, Chris Hughton, what is happening?
Yeah.
We thought Cardiff were pretty much dead and gone, but that is not the case. Brighton have brought Cardiff back into this race. So they face Newcastle, who, by the way, just won back-to-back games. They're up to 13th in the table. Tough news, Miguel Almiron, unfortunately, yes. Done for the season. Hamstring injury, questionable for Copa America.
Yeah, he looked he was grimacing in pain as he went off.
It looked like he was in tears.
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't know that there are stats necessarily that kind of capture what his impact has been
on
Newcastle. But here's the only, because he hasn't scored a goal, and I don't even know if he officially has contributed an assist.
No.
But when you talk to people who support Newcastle, when you look at kind of Newcastle Twitter, they'll make it sound like his impact has been integral.
He's a nice guy.
Done.
He's smiley. He's embraced the crowd, and he really works hard. So they love that. But it's way too soon to judge him yet in the Premier League. I think part of it is that he's their record signing, and they want him to do well.
Yeah,
that's a large part of it, and it's also coincided with Iosi Perez hitting a lot of form. I mean, he's the gem. If people want to talk about the gem, he's the hard work. He's the embodiment of Rafa's team.
Yeah. Now I will say this. Before Almiron this season, Newcastle had 6 wins, 6 draws, 13 losses. 13 losses. Since Almiron, 5 wins, 2 draws, 3 losses. It's a different team.
Do you know that at this point now in the season, they have the exact same record as last season? Not only do they have the exact same wins and losses, they have the exact same goal difference. Goals scored, goals against. How is this possible?
I wonder if this is just their ceiling. If they're going to just be what this, like this under Mike Ashley, you know, where they'll just kind of like float around with these kinds of signings and lack of signings.
It's better than relegation.
Of course, but if you're a Newcastle fan, are you like...
What do you mean if you're a Newcastle fan? If you're Rafa Benitez, he wants to do better. They've got to back him this summer. Or I think he should leave. He's the chance to build something there amazing if the board would just... work with him.
Yeah. Sunday, 7 a.m., another away fixture for Arsenal. They go to Leicester City. Arsenal in the midst of this rough patch, clearly losing back-to-back games. Like you said, maybe they have an eye on what's happening in the Europa League as well. Sunday, 9:05 a.m., Burnley and Manchester City. I wanted to ask you, we didn't mention this before in talking about City. Raheem Sterling made some comments about racism in football. I think it was Sky Sports he was talking to, and he suggested a 9-point deduction to clubs whose fans are found to have been making racist chants.
I mean, it's certainly something that should be considered. I don't think a lot of ideas should be off the table right now, considering how bad things have gotten. There's people trying to obfuscate the point by saying, oh, well, look, what if somebody goes into a ground and deliberately says something to get another team?
I wouldn't put it past certain animal fans to behave that way. I wouldn't.
Look, the spirit of what he's talking about, that this,
of course,
this could materially harm a team, is what I like about it. It's a genuine punitive measure. And really, civilized society, I can't believe it's come to this. It's ridiculous.
Sunday, 11:30, Manchester United and Chelsea. Two clubs battling right now for a top 4 spot. Chelsea currently occupy the 4th spot. Brutal blow, though, for them, and more so for the player himself, Callum Hudson-Odoi, who now finally seems to be getting his chance. Sarri is starting to play him. He's playing decently well.
He's been well.
And then he ruptures his Achilles, and he's done for the year.
And it kind of almost entirely means that it seals his fate somewhat, that he is going to be at Chelsea next season. It's not going to be the case where, well, are you going to give me guarantees that I'll play? It's like you're going to have to rehab, come back. Nobody's buying him in the current condition he'll be in now. So it's a shame for him.
Yeah, really unfortunate. Let's see, JJ. MLS Saturday, 5 p.m., Vancouver and Philadelphia. I'm starting to wonder if we underestimated the Union a little bit. We thought, oh, Marco Fabian, what is that signing? Oh, Bedoya, what's he going to be? And all of a sudden they look great.
It's April, Andrew. We shouldn't
analyze. We shouldn't talk about it. No, all right. We'll
no,
move on.
But
no, no, red card. Let's go.
If you want me to say that I underestimate the Union, obviously. So far, so good for them.
We do a whole week called Jump to Conclusions Week.
I know, but people haven't got that either. They were like, you got DC United wrong. That's the point.
Well, the point isn't to get stuff wrong.
Oh, my God.
We'd rather be right.
The point is to jump to a wild conclusion, see what happens. It's fun.
Let's see. Saturday, 6 p.m., Atlanta and Colorado, and Atlanta losing again.
I have more thoughts on this than I do Philadelphia, to be honest with you.
Okay.
You asked in the rundown, what is going on with Atlanta?
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the basics. Up until his penalty versus Dallas, I couldn't believe this. Joseph Martinez was over 7 hours without a goal. That's problem number one. Now, why might that be happening? First of all, look at the defending in transition on the break from Atlanta on both the Ferreira and Acosta goals. It's just horrifying the amount of time and space that those players had to score for Dallas. Also, Atlanta are now, and this is the thing for me, they're now a passing possession team rather than a lightning quick counter-attacking team. And that's got to be affecting Martinez's numbers. That's not who they are or how they became a success, and De Boer has got to realise that. You want to hear this stat, Andrew?
Mm-hmm.
600 passes, 72% possession at home for Atlanta. That's great if you're Manchester City or Barcelona. For Atlanta and the way they play, it's absolutely stifling. It's stifling. Now, look, Barco hits the post. That one goes in. We're having a different conversation. But that's it. They dominated the game. They passed, but it's a much more methodical and slow process for Atlanta now. And that's got to change.
All about the Almiron effect. I just told you Newcastle's record since he arrived.
Why would you not just engage with the great knowledge of the game that I've just dropped for you? You just want to put it down to one guy. I actually agree with you. That's probably part of it. But De Boer is boring them.
Sunday, 1:30, Minnesota and aforementioned DC United. DC, as many teams are, a lot of midweek action, actually.
We put the hex on them.
Well,
I did.
They're still in first in the East. Now, they games already, they've played eight. Everyone else has played six.
Of course.
It's nuts. DC in action right now. Like I said, a lot of teams are. They're up 1-0 currently on Columbus. So by the time you're hearing this, I don't know if I want to go too deep on criticizing them. But they were poor against NYCFC.
And NYCFC themselves aren't great. So,
well, NYCFC might be better than we thought they were going to be. They're scoring goals, I think, a little easier than what we thought was going to be the case for them. Mitrica starting to click on.
And their new signing got a goal at the weekend as well, Haber. But it's very early in their turnaround.
Sunday, 3:30, Seattle Sounders, LAFC. Probably your marquee game of the weekend. I'd say maybe a statement.
Didn't they just play?
They did just play, and it didn't go well. They met last Sunday. LA smashed them 4-1. However, Raul Ruiz Diaz missed his third straight game with an injury, contusion. Chad Marshall missed the game with knee inflammation. Will Bruin missed the game with a hamstring injury. So they are ravaged right now. We'll see who's able to play in this one. It's unfortunate because this could be such a fun matchup, these two teams meeting, two of the best in the West right now.
Yeah.
But Seattle are kind of a shell of what they really are. So I want to call it a statement game, but might be a little bit unfair to judge them, truly.
Probably a little bit early for that.
Let's see, JJ. Let's do this.
Red card.
You want to go first?
Yes, Gary Neville. Andrew, can you play what Gary Neville said at the weekend after United's thumping at Goodison Park on Sunday?
Let's bring in Gary Neville, who, if you remember, was saying his blood was boiling before the match today. So what's its temperature now, Gary?
I'm furious, to be honest with you. The fact that he's had to go over and apologise for them. I've often said that clubs over the last 7 years, if you've got weeds in the garden, you've got to get rid of them. But there's some Japanese knotweed at that football club, and it's attacking the foundations of the house that needs dealing with properly. The idea that Ollie, a few weeks ago, I said that, you know, Jose Mourinho, the fans stuck with him but wanted him out at the end. They ain't going to want Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out. They're not going to turn Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Those players now, the well and truly, their heads are on the line.
Huh. Okay. So, interesting. Can you play what Gary Neville said after United knocked out PSG?
Three very quick questions for you. How long would you like on your contract? What would your salary like to be? And where would you like the statue?
Fantastic night, eh?
Okay. This was Gary Neville earlier today. So about what? Over 48 hours since the hammering at Goodison.
You know, we've been sat like this for 11 years, more or less.
Next to each other.
It's true. Slightly.
That's true.
You must be deaf in that ear.
Justin, this is part of the interview, by the way. We sat next to each other for 11 years in the changing room. And it was a lot nicer than this. I could put my arm around him.
It was better then.
Oh, right.
Good friends, you would say. 11 years together. Here's the problem. So when Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and when United were putting in good performances and winning in Europe It was about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And when now that they're not doing that, it's about the players. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer shouldn't have to apologise to the fans. Like, here's the problem. Gary Neville, especially in the world of Ed Woodward, who we know from what's been written in the papers, loves headlines, wants there to be a good mood, and is worried about what the media says. We know that Gary Neville commands a lot of power and respect in those circles. And what concerns me here is this, Andrew. He can't just pick and choose now. He's got to criticise Solskjaer for these results. You can't just say that it was Solskjaer's effect that won them those games, but when they lose, it wasn't. They're the same players. So what's changed? Now, I don't believe in absolving the players entirely from blame, but I have to ask questions about Solskjaer's coaching. We heard today that he took them to Carrington, the former old Manchester United haunt where they used to train. Why did he bring him there? So that the ghost of George Best would inhabit their bodies and inspire them to beat Manchester City. Like, I just think Gary Neville is too close to this now. He's too close to the manager. And actually, there's a support system in the media now for Solskjaer that Jose Mourinho never had and often complained about. I don't think this is good. Neville's got to be even-handed here. That is not even-handed.
I get what you're saying.
You've got to address what the manager's done. Ultimately, if it was he that came into the club and changed everything, then he has to take responsibility for the debacle at the weekend. That's how it works. You can't pick and choose. It's so interesting.
It's a fair point. However, it is kind of like what Gary Neville's saying is not all that much different than what you and I were saying earlier, that this team is just, like, the manager almost doesn't matter right now.
No,
they've
I don't
got a lot
subscribe.
Of players that
I
are just not good
definitely
enough.
That he has to get rid of. But
right.
But
that's kind of what Neville was saying.
No, it's not. These are the same players that pulled out these great results that got him the job. What has changed? That is the question. Is he tactically good enough? Is he capable of putting out different teams to meet different opposition? That's the question. I think we're discovering that he's not. And also the fact that he's got such an ally in the national broadcast media in England, that's an advantage to him too, and certainly in the eyes of Ed Woodward.
Let's see, my red card, JJ, is New England Revolution forwards. I saw a stat from Matthew Doyle on Twitter that I couldn't even believe. Here it is. He tweeted this during the New England-New York Red Bulls match. He said, Teal Bunbury just put a shot on goal in the 55th minute for the Revs against the Red Bulls. It's the first shot on goal by a Revs center forward this year. 685 minutes, about 11 and a half hours. Mother of God. Now, the Revs actually won the game 1-0 thanks to a Christian Pena goal in the 73rd minute. Not surprisingly, it broke a goalless streak for the club of 281 minutes.
That's wild.
So I feel bad making them kind of my red card in a match that they won, but God, for your center forwards to go 11 and a half hours, we're not saying without scoring a goal. We're saying without having a shot on target. That's unbelievable.
You got to feel. Yeah. Remember last year we talked about if you got fit, but you stayed at the same skill level and you were inserted into a Premier League game, how many goals would you score? And you played the full 90 every game.
The answer is zero. For you two.
I think you'd hit the target, though.
Well, maybe, but the answer is zero.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
What do you got?
My man of the match is also from MLS. 10 goals through 9 games, Andrew, which seems just a ridiculous figure. Also contributing 5 assists, meaning he's directly factored into 15 of LAFC's 25 goals at 60%. Carlos Vela is having a season where it's been debated by Hercules Gomez of ESPN FC whether he's cruising or not.
He's also a player that for as much as he does well, he kind of goes and coasts through games. He floats, he pick and chooses when, and he's still very effective. And I'll give you a few examples. Carlos Vela scored a goal and 3 assists versus Portland. And I called that game for Deportes. And I remember thinking after this game, that was a poor performance from Carlos Vela. That was subpar from Carlos Vela. And he scored a goal and had 3 assists. So he's kind of coasting through this league at this moment. I don't think LAFC or Carlos Vela are quite as good as we make them out to be at this moment. But Carlos Vela is no doubt playing at another level than everybody else in Major League Soccer.
Well, I wonder, that was a couple of weeks ago. What is he saying right now? Andrew, he is far and away the best player in MLS. And I'm not sure that he's coasting. I think he's cruising.
I couldn't tell almost if that's if Hercules Gomez is complimenting him or insulting him.
I think he doesn't know what to do. He thinks that he can play at a higher level, basically, is what he's saying.
So I guess it is a compliment.
Yeah.
That this guy is dominating and we're not even seeing the best from him.
And this is his goal against Seattle, outside of the boot. Just a beautiful goal.
So you won't be there, I guess, but Alexi and I are looking forward to go back there as Kane rolls it in. Fail a great control. He scores!
John Strong's not kidding. It really was an incredible first touch from Vela because while the pass was perfect,
It
had a lot of pace to it, and it was in tight quarters for Vela to receive.
Right foot. He controls it on the right foot, wasn't it? And then smashes home with the left.
Yeah, I think so.
Just the finish is what struck me.
Yeah.
It's one of those questions we asked it before with Giovinco. Are they just like too good for the league?
No, come on. That's
why is it ridiculous?
Okay, then fine. Let's ask that about, you know, when Mo Salah last year. Or like, you know, what Messi's doing in La Liga.
Maybe.
We don't say those guys are too good for their leagues. Like, we can't just have great players in MLS. Like, they have to be. That bothers me.
I can see. All right. I just asked the question.
Well, I don't care for the question. And I don't really care for the person that asked it either.
Wow.
Man of the match for me, JJ.
Not listening, though. You don't care for me. I'm going to get up and leave.
PSG.
Oh, my God.
And Choupo-Moting can finally breathe a sigh of relief. They beat Monaco on Sunday to win Ligue 1, although they actually won the league earlier in the day when Lille failed to win against Toulouse. Second straight league title for PSG, sixth in the last 7 years. They've now won 8 titles in their history, just 2 behind Marseille and Saint-Étienne for the most of all time. Mbappe had a hat trick in the win. He's now got 30 goals in 27 league matches this year. They'll face Rennes this Saturday in the Coupe de France final. Going for the double. Neymar's back. Cavani and Di Marina also fit once again. Be a massive surprise, I think, to everyone should they not go on and get that double. Even with that season, I don't think can be looked at as a success.
Nope.
Because of the Champions League. And co-men of the match, I guess you could say. Juventus also sharing this with PSG. Well, I'm trying to give some credit to the clubs that won titles this past weekend. What's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
8 straight titles for Juve. Are you kidding me? They came back from a goal down against Fiorentina, 2-1, to do it. In addition to that, obviously being a team achievement, it's also a historic achievement for Ronaldo. He becomes the first player to win titles in the Premier League, La Liga, and Serie A. Ronaldo also reportedly has wasted little time in telling the club who he'd now like them to sign. Have you seen his list? He provided a list of 6 players that he would like. He wants Varane, former teammate at Real Madrid. He wants Isco, also a former teammate at Real Madrid. He wants Kostas Manolas, the Greek center back from Roma. He wants Tanguy Ndombele, Lyon midfielder, who I guess is impressed in the Champions League. Federico Chiesa, 21-year-old Fiorentina midfielder.
Like him a lot.
He wants, and also João Félix, 19-year-old Benfica attacking midfielder.
And, I mean, once you say Varane and Isco, you're already going to be in financial fair play waters.
Where will this money, you're right.
And, well, the Agnellis will pay for it.
But so. Well, you're going to have to offload somebody, and I don't know who. I mean, I would look at
how
that
much
and
are you
say,
getting for Emre Can, well, Blaise Matuidi?
But that, it won't be them. It has to be somebody of value. I look at that and I say Dybala.
See ya.
Absolutely. That's the first name that comes to mind for me. So there you go. I would have had Barcelona on here, but they've been made to wait because Atletico Madrid did win today 3-2. They scored an 88th-minute winner against, I think it was it Valencia that they played today? I don't remember exactly. But they won 3-2, and so that delays the essentially the inevitable. So the next time we do this podcast, I'll probably be anointing Barcelona as my man of the match.
You mentioned Monaco there and the PSG and the rumors about Thierry Henry rejoining New York Red Bulls as their head coach.
Yeah,
the Red Bulls
are denying it adamantly. But I don't know. Sometimes where there's smoke, there's fire. But we'll see. Ready? What are you doing this weekend?
Nothing.
That's not an answer.
I'm going bowling.
Is that real?
No, I just made that up. I actually would like to.
Shane Long just scored. Couldn't even tell me what you were doing this weekend without lying in the amount of time it took Shane Long to score a goal.
Wow,
unbelievable.
That's interesting.
Well, hey, this was fun, my friend. I do want to tell everybody once again to check out Laughter Permitted with Julie Foudy. podcast at ESPN. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Apple, PodCenter, all those places. So check it out, because it's I've been listening. It's really fun, honestly.
The laughter's permitted, I would hope so.
Yeah. So there you go, man. We'll be back. When do you think? I guess it's TBD.
Well,
next week. We'll have to see what happens this weekend.
If things happen this weekend, we have to have a Monday pod. It's not nice.
Actually, next week...
We need guests on again. We haven't had a guest in a while. Let's have a fun guest on. We haven't had a guest in about 3 weeks, I would say. Unless you count yourself as a guest on vacation.
I don't. Obviously. No. All right, fine.
Let's do something fun on Monday.
Let's have a fun time talking to other people that aren't fun, you and me.
Fun permitted.
Yes. Well, hey, this was fun. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
See you later, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.